Let's go ahead and dive back into the Word by opening to Ezekiel chapter number 11, where we're going to start at verse number 14. Now, I hope you found the visions of Ezekiel as thrilling and exciting as I do. This is one of those times that the veil is pulled back between the physical world and the spiritual world. And we can see how one impacts on the other. We get to see into the very throne room of God. Now, in this context, God has come calling for judgment. And so there's a lot of sad things that are associated with this vision of God's throne, but we still learn a lot whenever we look into these passages. And so I hope you found that interesting. So in Ezekiel chapter 11, verse number 14, we finish with the second time that Ezekiel sees the glory of God. Now, he had been pulled in this vision out of his body, apparently, up in Mesopotamia, in the city of Tel Aviv, which is just a little bit southeast of Babylon City. He's been pulled spiritually all the way to Jerusalem, and he's been shown all the abominable things that have been going on. And then he sees a vision of God's glory get up off the Ark of the Covenant, come out to the front porch of the temple, and then get onto the glory cloud, onto the throne cloud, and move to the eastern gate, preparing to leave, apparently, the temple complex and Jerusalem, and to allow it to be destroyed since they'd already abandoned him as their king. So Ezekiel chapter 11, verse 14 says, "The word of he who is came to me, son of man, your brothers, even your brothers, your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, all of them, are those of whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said, 'Go far from he who is. To us this land is given for a possession.'" So there's a dividing up that's happening here. A lot of the people who are willing to submit to the judgment of God and be taken out of the land into exile have gone away willingly, and the people who are left behind are basically calling them quitters and saying, "Fine, go away. This is our place. We possess this place." And so God tells Ezekiel to say this about that. Verse 16, "Therefore say, thus says he who is God, though I removed them far off among the nations, and though I scattered them among the countries, yet I have been a sanctuary to them for a while in the countries where they have gone." So God effectively says, look, I'm their sanctuary. Me. My relationship with them is what protects them and makes the difference. Not this building here, not this city with the walls. Because they'd run into this problem that this last couple of generations of Judeans have looked at the Ark of the Covenant, at the temple, and even at Jerusalem itself as if they were some sort of magical talismans that would keep them safe. They'd say things like, "The Ark of the Lord, the Ark of the Lord," or "The Temple of the Lord, the Temple of the Lord, the Holy City, the Holy City," and think that that meant they were protected. And God's response is, no. You guys should not think that because you get to stay here right now, that you are the ones that are blessed, and we're going to put that in air quotes, because the real blessed ones are those that were willing to submit, humble themselves under God's hand so that he can lift them up later at an appropriate time. Let's continue. Verse 17, therefore say, thus says he who is God, I will gather you from the peoples and assemble you out of the countries where you have been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. Now that's directed to those who have already gone and a few more that will join them in exile. They will become the seed stock. They are the, if we can grab one of the visions of Jeremiah, they were the good basket of figs that God has set away, stored them away in Babylon for later use. So they will be coming back, or at least their descendants will. Verse 18, and when they come there, they will remove from it all its detestable things and all its abominations. And I will give them one heart, and a new spirit I will put within them. I will remove the heart of stone from their flesh and give them a heart of flesh, that they may walk in my statutes and keep my rules and obey them. And they shall be my people, and I will be their God. Now, some of this is a reference to the righteous remnant coming back in the time of Zerubbabel, Joshua the high priest, later Ezra the scribe, and even Nehemiah and his people. Those are righteous people coming back to the Holy Land to restart the Jewish nation and to continue the messianic project that God is using them for. But the more permanent fulfillment of this passage, I think, has to be the second coming of Jesus, with the resurrection of the righteous saints from all the past and the righteous saints still alive at the time of Jesus' return. They're going to be resurrected and they will be given this new permanent relationship with God. They'll never turn from him again. And that is when it will certainly be true that they shall be God's people and God will be their God. Now, verse 21, but as for those whose heart goes after their detestable things and their abominations, I will bring their deeds upon their own heads, declares he who is God. So one parting shot, those that keep sinning will pay the penalty that God's been talking about through Ezekiel, through Jeremiah. Verse 22. Then the cherubim lifted up their wings with the wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them. And the glory of He who is went up from the midst of the city and stood on the mountain that is on the east side of the city, otherwise known to us as the Mount of Olives. So the last place that the glory of God is seen in the history, the Old Testament history of the Jewish people, even though it was seen specifically by Ezekiel the prophet, the last place where the glory of God was seen was the Mount of Olives. And God's glory is no longer seen among the Jewish people until a certain prophet from Nazareth appears on the scene, and the Spirit of the Lord is upon him to proclaim the word of the Lord. And one of the last things that he does before he atones for sin is he rides from the top of the Mount of Olives down a little winding trail and across the Kidron and into Jerusalem. And we call this the triumphal entry of Jesus. But it's actually the day on which he devoted himself to be the atoning sacrifice for sin. He was the Passover lamb coming into the city of Jerusalem on the 10th day of the first Jewish month, just like the Passover lambs had to be brought in. So I want to refer to one other time that the Mount of Olives comes into the play, and that is in the book of Zechariah, which we'll eventually get to, the Messiah appears over the sky of the Middle East and comes down and sets his feet upon the Mount of Olives as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And the mountain splits in half and a new valley opens and the river of the water of life starts pouring off the Temple Mount and through this new valley into the Dead Sea and brings it alive. It's just an amazing thing. It's the whole recreation of all things. It's the new heavens and the new earth. And Jesus' second coming is attended to by the resurrection and the transformation of the saints. And so that's the glory of God coming back from the Mount of Olives. And I look forward to being able to see that. But here, we prophetically see it disappear. God's glory leaves because of sin. Verse 24, "And the Spirit lifted me up and brought me in the vision by the Spirit of God into Chaldea to the exiles. And then the vision that I'd seen went up from me, and I told the exiles all the things that he who is had shown me." Now, you remember when we started all this, that I told you that Ezekiel's body, his physical form, apparently stayed right there at his house in Tel Aviv, just southeast of Babylon City, in the presence of the elders of Israel that were already in exile. He just goes into a trance, and sometime later, we don't know how long later, might have been a few hours, it might have been a few days, he suddenly comes back into that body, and he begins telling the people, the leadership first, what he saw. All the things that we've just talked about in the last few sessions. And you know that it must have really been hard on them to hear these truths, that because of sin, God was abandoning the temple, abandoning the city, abandoning the country, and abandoning the people that were in sin. And he was going to take a remnant away, a little bit more, at the destruction of Jerusalem, a few more exiles to Mesopotamia, and they would be saved there until he was ready to send them back and restart his work with the nation of Israel. Chapter number 12 seems to follow right on the heels of everything that we've been reading. So let's treat it as if it's part of this same time period prophecy. "The word of he who is came to me, Son of man, you dwell in the midst of a rebellious house, who have eyes to see, but see not, who have ears to hear, but hear not, for they are a rebellious house." Now that language is similar to what Jeremiah has been preaching since he started. And the way he phrases it at God's direction is, yeah, if they opened their eyes and actually saw, if they opened their ears and actually heard, they might repent and turn, and then I would heal them. But the implication was they weren't going to do it. So here is Ezekiel getting the same message. These guys are rebellious. Verse 3, "As for you, son of man, prepare for yourself an exile's baggage and go into exile by night in their sight." Ezekiel gets to do these pantomimes to show the people already in Babylonian exile things that are going to happen to the people in connection with God's judgment of sinful Judea. So this time, he's going to put on a pantomime of what's going to happen to the king and those with him whenever the city is broken into by the Babylonians. So he is told to pack together what an exile would take as they are getting ready to flee from their house away from a war zone. So, you know, you'd put very minimal clothes, maybe some food, maybe some precious heirloom that you were willing to carry, but it would be a small amount of things, only what you can carry. And so he's going to put all that together, and then he's going to come out after sunset in front of the people and put on this pantomime. Continuing in the verse 3. You shall go like an exile from your place to another place in their sight. Perhaps they will understand, although they are a rebellious house. You shall bring out your baggage by day in their sight. So a little bit of a tweak of the information we already given here. He's going to bring out his little exile baggage during the daylight hours to get people's attention to him putting on this pantomime. So he's going to bring that out, and they're going to start wondering, what's this about? What's the prophet doing now? So you shall bring out your baggage by day in their sight as baggage for exile. And you shall go out yourself at evening in their sight as those who must go into exile. In their sight, dig through the wall and bring your baggage out through it. Now the wall here is apparently not the wall of the house, but rather some sort of courtyard wall so that everybody can see what he's doing. We'll have the wall thing explained in a bit. So he digs through, maybe picks at it and kicks at it until he can break the components of the wall apart so that there's just enough room that he can get through. Verse 6, in their sight, you shall lift the baggage upon your shoulder and carry it out at dusk. You shall cover your face that you may not see the land, for I have made you a sign for the house of Israel. Very important that he does this. He apparently puts a blindfold on when he does this departure with his exile baggage digging through the wall. Now, verse 7. I did as I was commanded. I brought out my baggage by day as baggage for exile. In the evening, I dug through the wall with my own hands. I brought out my baggage at dusk, carrying it on my shoulder in their sight. And remember, he's got himself blindfolded when he does this. In the morning, that is when the daylight happens again, the word of he who is came to me, Son of man, has not the house of Israel, the rebellious house, said to you, what are you doing? Say to them, thus says he who is God. This oracle, this prophecy concerns the prince in Jerusalem and all the house of Israel who are in it. The prince that he's referring to is King Zedekiah, the guy that's king in Jerusalem right now. This is all happening in 593. So Zedekiah has been king now for about 6 years. And he's the last king. There will be no other kings after him until the Messiah is king. Verse 11, say, I am a sign for you. As I have done, so shall it be done to them. They shall go into exile, into captivity. And the prince who is among them shall lift his baggage upon his shoulders at dusk and shall go out. They shall dig through the wall to bring him out through it. He shall cover his face that he may not see the land with his eyes. All right, so we've got this idea that King Zedekiah, whenever it looks like the Babylonians have broken through the walls and are getting ready to overrun the city, we know this is a fact that'll come up later. He and his entourage will have already had plans to take what little they can carry, and they will break out a little place on the wall, a little secret place, in order to try to escape from the Babylonians. And he apparently is wearing some sort of disguise over his face, over his head, maybe even got his eyes a little bit blindfolded. Verse 13, and I will spread my net over him, and he shall be taken in my snare. So God says, he's not going to get away. I'm going to catch him just like in a dragnet. And I will bring him to Babylon, the land of the Chaldeans. So he will be taken into exile. Yet, listen to the rest of this prophecy, he shall not see it, and he shall die there. So there's a little bit of a puzzle that's put in place here that will be understood when it happens. And I'm going to go ahead and give you a spoiler here. When Zedekiah is captured by the Babylonians on his little attempt to escape, before they ship him off to Babylon, they make him watch all his children, his heirs, be executed in front of him. And then they blind him immediately after that, so that the last thing that he sees is the death of his heirs. And then they cart him off to Babylon, where he spends the rest of his life and where he dies. So yes, he will go to Babylon and he will die there, but he will never see Babylon. On to the text again. Verse number 14 repeats some things we've already heard. I will scatter toward every wind all who were around him, his helpers, all his troops, and I will unsheath the sword after them. And they shall know that I am he who is when I disperse them among the nations and scatter them among the countries. So that's why on the day that Ezekiel is told, today Jerusalem fell, he's going to burn a third of his hair, and he's going to chop at a third of his hair with a sword, and then he's going to let the wind blow a third of his hair away, because that's what's going to happen in the process of God's judgment against the Judeans. They shall know that I am he who is when I disperse them among the nations and scatter them among the countries. But I will let a few of them escape from the sword, from famine and pestilence, that they may declare all their abominations among the nations where they go, and may know that I am he who is. So a remnant will get away, and they will end up in Babylon and in other places. And there, the goal is, and we know the reality will be, at least for some of them, will come to their senses and grieve over their sinful practices, and they will repent. And then we will have a righteous remnant coming back to start over again later. Verse 17, the word of he who is came to me, son of man, eat your bread with quaking and drink water with trembling and with anxiety. So another little pantomime that he's going to put on. He's going to pretend that he's like terrified whenever he eats his meals and drinks his water. Say to the people of the land, thus says he who is God concerning the inhabitants of Jerusalem in the land of Israel. They shall eat their bread with anxiety and drink their water in dismay. In this way, her land will be stripped of all it contains on account of the violence of all those who dwell in it. And the inhabited cities shall be laid waste, and the land shall become a desolation, and you shall know that I am he who is. So a repeating again of the message that keeps coming up both in Jeremiah and Ezekiel's ministry. Verse 21, the word of he who is came to me. Son of man, what is this proverb that you have, and it's the plural you, you Israelis, you Judeans. What is this proverb that you have about the land of Israel saying, the days grow long and every vision comes to nothing? Basically, these prophecies just keep coming over time, over and over and over again, and nothing ever happens like they say. Because, you know, Jerusalem hasn't been destroyed yet. Tell them, therefore, thus says he who is God, I will put an end to this proverb, and they shall no more use it as a proverb in Israel. but say to them, the days are near, the fulfillment of every vision. For there shall be no more any false vision or flattering divination within the house of Israel, for I am he who is. I will speak the word that I will speak, and it will be performed. It will no longer be delayed, but in your days, O rebellious house, I will speak the word and perform it, declares he who is God. So time's up, clock's running down. You guys are going to see it happen exactly as I've been prophesying. And the word of he who is came to me, Son of Man. Behold, they of the house of Israel say, the vision that he sees is for many days from now, and the prophecies of times far off. So he's not talking about now, he's talking about a long time from now. Therefore say to them, thus says he who is God, none of my words will be delayed any longer, but the word that I speak will be performed, declares he who is God. And there is an interesting parallel to this in the book of Revelation. There is a point at which it is said, there will be no more delay. And then all the things that God's been prophesying happens. Just because he delays doesn't mean it's not coming.